Welcome back to another episode of the Jasmine Star Show. My name's Christy, and I'm the podcast coordinator for this lovely podcast you tune into every single week. Are you ready to talk money, honey? Because today's guest is Rachel Cruz, a two-time number one national best-selling author, financial expert, and host of The Rachel Cruz Show. Since 2010, Rachel's served at Ramsey Solutions, where she teaches people to avoid debt, save money, budget, and how to win with money at any stage in life. She's authored three best-selling books, including one that she co-wrote with her father, Dave Ramsey, and a brand new book that she's going to tell you all about today. Our goal for this interview is for you to understand why you handle money the way that you do to create a serious life change that lasts in your life and business. Because something Jasmine and I learned within the first 5 minutes of this conversation is that we handle our money in all aspects of our lives the exact same way, whether we admit it or not. Seriously, Jasmine and I cannot get enough of Rachel's kind heart and financial wisdom, and I know you're going to love her too. Let's listen in.
Friends, I'm so excited. Every time we have the opportunity to bring somebody on the podcast, I always start with the personal connection to the person, even if that person doesn't really know that I exist in real life. The guest we're about to introduce is Rachel Cruz. Now, I have to let you know a little bit of the backstory. Rachel and my sister, Bianca Olthoff, who's also happened to be a guest on the podcast, well, they know each other and they talk. And I'm fascinated with Bianca's friend, Rachel, just creeping on all of her social media, thinking she's bright and brilliant. And I casually want to become Rachel's friend by way of osmosis. And it also happens to be that Rachel knows Bianca. And Bianca, if you guys remember, is like the nice and holy twin. She also, although I probably would never admit this, she's probably a little bit funnier than I am. And so I reach out to Rachel's people and then I kind of have a panic attack. And so I, you know, do the nepotism queen move. And I'm like, Bianca, can you talk to your friend Rachel? And let me, maybe her people could talk to my people. Maybe we could be people. Lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, Rachel Cruz is on the podcast. Welcome to the Jasmine Show. I'm so happy you're here.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm here. I know we were talking about Bianca and I was like, oh no, but Jasmine, I've been wanting to meet you because you're like killing it in life.
Well, I'm the heathen twin, so she could pray for me. And I'm like, Lord, can I get to heaven by way of proxy? Because if that's the case, I'm fine. I'm going to let you down, Rachel. You know, Bianca is amazing. So I'm like the second rate twin and I'm here for it. I just want to say thank you for being here.
Oh, stop it. No, I'm so excited. Well, you're killing it, Jasmine. So again, the fact I'm on here, I'm so honored.
Thank you. Thank you. Speaking of us connecting by way of social media, can I share a recent Instagram post where you wrote something that I thought was extraordinarily fascinating?
Yeah.
You shared a surprising statistic, and I'm going to read it. What does it take to waste $5,000 a year spending just $13.70 on stuff you don't need? Okay, this really hit home, and judging by the amount of likes and shares that that post got with your audience, I think it's resonating with a lot of people. So to start this interview, I want to ask a question that will help contextualize our future conversation for people listening. So what do you wish more business owners knew about managing their money?
I would say I wish business owners realize that the way they deal with their personal finances in their home, it's the same habits they're bringing into their business.
Ooh.
Like we sometimes separate them and we think, oh, well, you know, Rachel over here in the business can do this, but when I go home, I'm this. I'm the same person that's going back and forth. And so when you create good, healthy money habits, whether in your business, it's going to bleed over to your home, or you decide to change your budget at home and actually live on one and be intentional, it's going to bleed over to your business.
I wonder from an outsider's perspective with an extensive amount of experience as a child, I don't know if my sister had kind of let you know like our upbringing, very simple, daughters of immigrants. We did not have money. And so money was this thing, this passport that people possessed that myself and our family just did not. And even as a child, I subconsciously was digesting this. And I will never forget that anytime that I got a dollar, $5, anytime I did a job or I got a birthday money, I would take out an iron and I would iron my money and I would fold it neatly and I would put it in a Band-Aid tin and hide it somewhere. And those habits, like you mentioned, like who you are, like in your home life and your business life, I think is stemming from childhood because still to this day, I don't iron my money, but I will hide cash in random places. Like, you know, you're a daughter of an immigrant. You're like, whoa, where did I find this cash? It's like I was raised in the Depression or something. So for somebody who has like this somewhat like distance relationship with money, what are a few steps like right now off the top of your head? What is one thing? What is one mantra? What is one action? What can we do to have a hyper awareness of our relationship with money?
Yeah, I think it's realizing where it's positioned in your life. And so, for instance, I always like to tell people, it's okay to have nice stuff. Don't let your nice stuff have you. And you can put money in that as well. So when it starts to own you and it becomes the only goal in life, it becomes your identity, it becomes your only source of security and safety, it's the only thing. It ends up being your God, for instance. And so and that will fail you time and time again. But when you put it in a position where you say, you know what, I'm going to use money as a tool. It's a tool in my life to create a life that I love and one that I can be generous to others. But viewing money again, that it doesn't own you, you own it in a sense to say, no, I'm going to take control of this money.
Okay. So I believe that there are three types of people who are listening right now. Number one, a person who can clearly identify, no, money doesn't own me. And then there are people who can clearly identify, you know what? Money does own me. And this is an opportunity for me to course correct. And then there's a group of people who are like, well, I'm not sure if money owns me. Is there like a question or series of questions you can ask yourself like immediately to say, this is the litmus test. Like, how do I know money owns me?
Well, I mean, I hate to say it because sometimes it's so subconscious. For instance, I would have told you 12 months ago that I had a very healthy relationship with money. I mean, I teach about it all the time. But then enter 2020, the pandemic. Like in April, I remember thinking multiple times, are we going to be okay? Like the cruises on paper are fine. For a decade, we've been doing this stuff. But I even felt myself tense up. And then I realized, wow, subconsciously, have I been putting so much value and safety in these investment accounts and in my checking account more than I even realized. So I think it's kind of that tried and true question. And I do this with my job as well. I always say, okay, if crap hits the fan tomorrow and all of this is taken away, everything's taken away, who am I? Like where have I put my time? Where have I put my identity? And so that kind of grounds me back to things that money can't buy, right? Your relationships, your marriage, if you have kids. I mean, you can kind of go through the list to say, no, my family, like I have things in my life that money could never buy. That is my tried and true value. That is so, so important to have. But when we start replacing that value with tangible money, with stuff, with the American dream of bigger and better, constant, and it all gets taken away, like a lot of people that happened in 2020, it shakes you to your core. And so for me, I'm a person of faith as well. So my relationship with God is such a huge part of this. So it's those things that money can't buy that I really believe we have to put our value in. And again, not that money is bad, not that stuff is bad, not that bigger and better is always bad. That stuff is not wrong. It's not evil. But again, if that stuff starts to own us, that's where it gets unhealthy.
Oh, so good. Okay. So this actually parlays into one of the questions I wanted to ask, because for years you've been teaching people how to manage their money. Like that's what you just said. And then all of a sudden 2020 kind of was like this wake up call. Like you were teaching people how to budget, save, get out of debt and build wealth. But in your new book, Know Yourself, Know Your Money, you kind of take a new approach and you want to help people understand why. Why is knowing yourself so important when it comes to managing your money? Like, I really want this podcast to like get to the nitty gritty. Let's talk about the ugly stuff. Let's bring it to the surface so that we walk away being like, these are the things I want to change.
Yes. Well, personal finance is 80% behavior. It's only 20% head knowledge. So to win with personal finance, it's such a small understanding. Like we know how to do it. It's like health and fitness. We all know what to do.
Oh, yes.
But actually doing it is what's so hard. It's so difficult to actually do it. But that behavior is what's key. And so like you said, I've been doing the how-to for a decade now. And so about probably 2 or 3 years ago, I was in counseling. I remember I read the book, The Birth Order, because I'm a middle child. And I was like, okay, how did my birth order affect me? I took the Enneagram. Like I was started just to kind of like—
Oh, Rachel, what are you? What are you for Enneagram?
Oh, I'm a three.
Oh gosh. What's your wing?
I think I'm a wing. Sometimes it's a two, but I think I really could be a four. I'm not super artistic, but I do have that individual where I'm like, I kind of want to be different, do my own thing a little bit.
Do you know that they titled, so Enneagram 3 is the achiever, and then Enneagram 4 is the achiever, individualist, with art tendencies, creativity. But they had said 3 wing 4 is identified as the professional. You probably are. I'm a 3 wing 4. That's what, yes, I am. So I know my people. So I'm like, girl, I'm pretty sure you're a wing four. Don't, you know, we just met, but I've been creeping for a while. I'm pretty sure you're a wing four.
I could, cause I'm too selfish to be a two. all that helping. I'm like, I don't know.
Okay. But getting back to the why. So you've done the how for over a decade. We're at the why. Okay. So you studied your Enneagram.
Yeah. On my own journey, really all the self-awareness came to the surface. So then I remember thinking, okay, what if I applied this to my money and start asking these questions? And Jasmine, it was like this black hole that I went down and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much here. Understanding why we handle money the way we do, everything from our childhood and our upbringing, like you said, to our fears, to our dreams, to our tendencies so much. And so when you can identify, this is why I'm handling money the way I do. This is why I'm putting my money in a Band-Aid container and hiding it away. Here's why I'm doing these things. Then you can actually say, okay, what are the bad habits that I have that I actually can change? Because I think so many of life's problems masquerade themselves as money problems. They're not really money problems. You don't really have a problem with budgeting. You don't really have a problem of conflict in your marriage about money. You have actually probably more of a marriage problem. You probably actually have a problem with contentment. Like there are heart issues, but they come out as money. And so when you can dig under that surface and become healthier in general, your money habits will follow.
Okay. So in Spanish, there's a word called chisme. So it's like, it's the real. It's not like gossip. It's just like, just tell me the real. So I'm going to ask Rachel a chisme question that I'm like, I'm not sure you're going to be comfortable answering, but like, is there a story from childhood that you now as an adult look back and be like, that's why I have this relationship with money?
Oh gosh, probably a lot. I mean, my story is interesting because I was actually born the year my parents filed for bankruptcy. So I was born in April, they filed in September. So the whole beginning of my life that I don't really remember, right? 1, 2, 3, 4 years old, whereas my parents climbing out of this financial hole. And so, I mean, I have my earliest memories though, are memories of consignment sales. Like we never shopped. We never went to a mall or store. We always went to a consignment sale or garage sales. We'd go find clothes at garage sales.
Oh, I know that.
I remember the only time we could go out to eat was on our birthday and we got to go to the Olive Garden. And it was like—
Oh, girl, that's high class. No, nobody diss on the Olive Garden, because if you got a sauce boat, I mean, that's it. You won the lottery. If you got that Alfredo's, the breadsticks, girl, yes.
So good. Yeah. So, I mean, I remember those early years of watching my parents sacrifice. So I think what that did for me, which I'm so thankful, and as an Enneagram 3, you'll appreciate this. I'm so thankful that that was my roots. Like I know what sacrifice looks like. I know what saying no to yourself looks like because my parents did it so often when I was young. And I think if I grew up with how my parents are now financially, even though they're very healthy when it comes to money, but I think I would probably be a bigger brat than I am right now. Like if I grew up in a household that was like Beverly Hills or something, I don't know how Rachel would turn out. But the fact that I saw sacrifice early on has given me the ability, I think, to put money in a healthier spot in my heart, in my head, in my heart. I'm not perfect at it by any means, but it kind of grounds me in that way.
I actually think that leads nicely to one of the next questions that I have, because in your book, you talk about the different types of money classrooms and how they shape the way we handle money. Can you explain what money classrooms are and then how those classrooms impact us?
Well, your childhood home growing up was your classroom. So there's so many lessons in life that you learn from that. There's a lot of lessons we all wish we could probably unlearn from that. Mm-hmm. But you take all that with you into adulthood. And so when it comes to money specifically, it's communicated in two ways. It's communicated verbally, and it's also communicated emotionally. So when I was writing the manuscript for this, I was realizing the parallels, and I was like, oh my gosh, this creates like a quadrant. I thought, oh, Jesus gave me a graph and I'm really excited about this graph.
Okay, you know you're a numbers girl when you quote, Jesus gave me a graph, and then you're happy about it.
I got it. This makes so much sense. And so what it ends up being are these four money classrooms. So the first money classroom is the anxious money classroom. And you knew you grew up in this classroom when it was verbally closed and emotionally stressed. So there was tension around money, maybe toward the end of the month when bills were due. You felt it. No one said much about it, but man, you could feel the tension in the air. Classroom number two is the unstable money classroom. And this is where it's verbally open and emotionally stressed. So lots of conflict, lots of fighting. You probably heard your parents have the same money fight over and over again. You know, your mom's shopping too much, or your dad's going out and doing this. Like whatever it is, you heard about it. Classroom number three is the unaware money classroom. And this is where it's verbally closed, but emotionally calm. So in this money classroom, your head was probably in the sand. You probably didn't really think much because there wasn't a lot of emotion around it because it was pretty calm, but yet no one talked about it. And then classroom number four is the healthiest money classroom. And this is the secure money classroom. And this is where it's verbally open and emotionally calm. So you could have $10 in this classroom or $10 million. But the idea is that there was a plan for the money. It was controlled. You knew what you were doing. And it was talked about. It was talked about on a tactical level. Your parents talked about budgeting. They talked about debt. They talked about investing. But they also talked about the emotional side of money. They talked about generosity. They talked about contentment. They talked about you know, in a healthy way, what money brings to your life. So that fourth money classroom is really, really where I encourage my readers to kind of go current day, if they can, present day, to head to that fourth money classroom. But it's important to look back in your life to say, okay, this is what I grew up in, classroom number one or classroom number two, because they all come with weaknesses and you can just see how it shapes who you are today.
So for somebody who's willing and desiring to get into classroom number four, and they're currently not, I learned by way of example. So what kind of conversations are you having with your children that I'm assuming you're in classroom number four? How do you stay emotionally calm? And then how do you have open conversations? Like, give us like a tactical, I'm starting from scratch.
Yes. Well, I would say on the tactical side, where you can say, okay, we're emotionally calm, it means that your money has to be controlled. If you are one of the 40% of Americans who can't cover a $400 emergency in cash, you're going to be stressed. If you're one of the 78% of Americans that live paycheck to paycheck, you're going to be stressed. So getting yourself in a good financial position automatically is going to lower that stress, meaning you're in control. You're doing a monthly budget. You know exactly where every single dollar is going. You're getting out of debt, so you have no bills. So if you do get laid off or you were furloughed, you're okay because you don't have a lot of bills and you have your money controlled. And so that's the key there, is to get your own household in order. But then with your kids, to let them in on some of this, right? If you're sitting down to do the budget and you feel comfortable showing numbers and it's age appropriate, bring them in and talk to them and show them. Show them where you're saying no. Show them, okay, we really want to go on vacation this year, but it's probably not wise. So mom or dad, if it's a single parent household, I'm choosing not to. And here's why. I mean, talk about it all, because money is not a taboo subject. And the moment it starts to be secretive, or the moment that you start to shame it, that's when it gets really unhealthy. And so that open conversation, again, your day-to-day decisions. And that's the thing about my family growing up. A lot of people think growing up as Dave Ramsey's daughter, we had like mutual fund birthday parties, like budget camps, and like we were obsessed with money. And thankfully we weren't, but they just brought in these conversations in the ebb and flow of life. So at the grocery store, just mention what you're doing, talk to them. I mean, it's amazing just having these little one-off conversations, what that does, because it really starts to shape your kids' understanding of the placement money has in your life.
So I don't want to speak too much for my parents, but I can safely assume that a lot of times the conversations we were not having were not as a result of the issue being taboo, but as a way to avoid disappointment. So if there are parents who right now, especially given 2020 and 2021 early onsets, a lot of conversations have to go around what they feel might be letting their children down. What is your advice for a parent who's looking across from their child who says, I really want this, or I really want to go here, or my friends are doing this? What's a positive way to talk about money as well as inform them what really is going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think for parents to share, but don't scare. So I think that is important, right? If you are about to be foreclosed on, you probably don't want to tell your four-year-old. Like, you probably just need to deal with the adult issue and turn on a happy face, in a sense. But when your children emotionally can be there, I've just realized the more human I can be with my kids, the more I can apologize, the more I can show weaknesses, the good and the bad, all of that, you become human. So when they face those things later in life, they can go back and think, oh yeah, mom really wanted to do that and she didn't. And she's okay. Like, she's okay. But if your child grows up and doesn't see any weakness or any pain in any part of life, and they start to have that on their own, they're going to feel very isolated because they've never seen it be, you know, show that example. So again, you don't have to overflow it. And 2020 has been a tough year. So there is a level of abundance I want us to have and not be Eeyore all the time. But if there are a couple of things that you're like, wow, as a family, we're going to cut back. Honesty is the best policy in my head. Again, age appropriately, in an emotional sense that they can handle it. But to say, hey, here's what's going on. And I just want you to know, like, this is tough. But what we're doing is we're making these sacrifices now, these short-term sacrifices, so that later in life we can do more things. We're saying no right now because we're being wise. But that means we get to do more stuff in the future. Because that's my hope for people. You know, there may be a season of sacrifice, but that sacrifice isn't just a sacrifice alone. It's in order to have a better future.
I love this. So can we do the flip side of it as well? Because not every listener is going through some financial difficulties to parlay that to their children. But just like yourself, you said your parents had a positive relationship and guided you, even if at later point, maybe 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, your parents were in a different financial situation than you were when you were younger. How, as somebody who is financially secure and has budgeted and is forecasting a very strong future, how could I parlay this to my daughter that, no, she's not going to get everything that she wants, or these are the decisions that we're making? How would I frame that?
Yes, this almost is a little bit more difficult, honestly, because it takes a level as a parent to pull back. When you have the ability to do things, like, right, I have the ability to go on Amazon and buy my daughter the little $5 right. necklace set that she wants. Right. Like, it's $5 for me, it's fine, right. like, it's not a big deal. But I realized I started to do that more and more, and I thought, I cannot do this. She thinks that Amazon just, you press a button on the phone, and, you know, it just all shows up. And I'm like, oh, gosh. So, yeah, I think that there's an element that you have to have a controlled sense, a guardrail, if you will, with money, and talking to your kids about it. So, again, going back to that quote I said at the beginning, but it's so true that it's okay to have nice stuff. Just don't let the nice stuff have you. And for kids that are in that environment, really trying not to raise entitlement. And I think allowing them to have their own responsibility. So I always go back to my childhood, but we were never given an allowance as kids. We were always on commission. So
oh my
you work,
God.
You get paid,
I can't.
You don't work, you
I
don't
literally
get
just got a, I literally got like a little lightning bolt through my body. I was like, commission? Talk to me about this. I want to know.
Yeah. So you do chores and you get paid for them. Like that's how you make money in the Ramsey household. And that's how you make money in the real world, right? Like
right.
your money's not just handed to you. You have to go and work for it. And so that early on was instilled. And then when you make money, you do three things with it. You give it, you save it, you spend it. And you can do that with a five-year-old. And so you just teach them these little three money muscles, if you will, and start to build that. And so as a parent, putting some of that responsibility on your kids so that they're giving their own money, because they give it differently when it's theirs, they save it differently when it's theirs, and they spend it differently when it's theirs. And letting them make mistakes, letting them have an experience with money is a really big part of that learning lesson. So as a parent, you have to learn to hold back sometimes, not just give them whatever they want, but you also want to put some of the responsibility on them too.
This is so good. I feel like I'm super selfish. If nobody gets a single thing from this podcast, your girl just straight came up. So Rachel, thank you. Now, a little bit along those lines, we're all wired differently when it comes to money. And you say that there's seven major money tendencies we all have. Can you share a few of those money tendencies and why they matter?
Yes. Okay. This was a fun part because I was seeing all these opposites, and not that neither of the tendencies that we talk about are right or wrong. The extremes can get unhealthy, but it's just kind of going down and saying, okay, this is how I'm wired. So naturally you're either a saver or a spender, just part of your DNA. So I'm a natural spender. I always have been. Are you saver or spender, Jasmine, would you say?
Oh, this is crazy. I am a hardwired saver. Bianca's a spender.
Okay. There you
go. I know.
Yes, but it's just part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is experiences or things. So when you buy something, do you tend to buy an experience, a great vacation, a great
dinner? A thing,
out,
girl. I'm a thing.
I'm a thing. Okay, we're opposite. Okay, see, I'm experience. My husband is things.
My husband's experience. Thing, yeah. Oh, my husband's experience. Totally.
Yes. Opposites attract. And I wish I knew that even, because part of this for me, almost like what the Enneagram did, I was like, I just want to give verbiage to this, because yes. I remember when Winston and I were first married, it was like the first year of marriage. We'd go out to dinner and Jasmine, he would never buy a drink. He drank water every restaurant we went to for like the first year of our marriage. And I would always be like, babe, get a glass of wine or get a Coke. Like, I don't care. Like, just have something to drink. And he's like, no, I'm not going to spend $8, $10 because I can go across the street and get a bottle of wine, you know, for
he's
that amount.
He's my spirit animal. He's my spirit animal.
Like, no. So, but for me now, I'm like, okay, if I wish I had known this as younger Rachel, because I would have said, okay, it's not that he doesn't want to have fun or enjoy the night out. He just doesn't value experience to the point that I do, where he's like, no, I want to go buy Alexa light bulbs so I can go in and say, Alexa, turn living room on, and it works. Like, that's what I want to spend my money on. So yeah, just understanding it. Okay, another one is quality versus quantity. Like, would you rather have 18 pairs of earrings, $20 off Amazon or something, or like two or three like nice, good,
it's quality.
Designer,
it's like, quality for me.
Quality. Okay. See, I'm quantity. Jasmine, we're so opposite.
Good Lord. And this is the one thing that I actually do very much appreciate. My husband and I are on the same page about is that, so it's not a matter of discrepancy. So, like, I know that if he does decide to spend a little bit more on a sweater, I completely understand he's going to have it for 3 years, but he knows the quality and he stands by it and he loves it. So that's
yes.
a good thing.
Yeah. And again, the extremes on all of these can be unhealthy. So like for me, the quantity extreme, this was 2020 for Rachel. It was so convicting. But I mean, I would just be on Amazon. I don't know why Amazon's like my thing, but I would just be on it randomly. And I'm like, why am I buying another pair of $12 earrings or buying a sweater that's $30? And I'm like, because I'm bored. And I'm like, okay, well, why am I doing this? I'm bored. Why am I not okay just being bored? I'm like, oh, because I don't want to sit here with just my thoughts. You know, like it, oh gosh. And so it starts to, I mean, I can justify purchases so easily and start to cope with that because I justify it because it's not expensive. And I'm like, no, it's fine. And then quality people on the extreme, my husband is this, if it's like not this certain type of material or it's not this certain brand or it's whatever, he's like, I don't want it. So it can, the extreme side of that, it can start to get unhealthy for the quality too. So again, both extremes.
I just have to say, I want to just thank you for this because teaching me and listeners how to have these conversations and start noticing that the reason why my husband wants to do something is because he values experience. And sometimes I just need to let go and be like, we're going to have the experience, even if I don't value it. So thank you. This is marriage advice and money advice. Okay. The fourth tendency.
Okay. Another one, scarcity versus abundance. So half, you know, life's a little bit more finite, a little bit more limited. Maybe, you know, that's opportunity may never come again. So I need to take it. It's kind of that scarcity mindset versus abundance. It's like, oh no, there'll always be more options, more decisions, more money to be made, where you lean. So my husband, he's an Enneagram 5. So he's a scarcity naturally. Okay. He naturally kind of brings in and hoards a little bit and takes his time. And I'm abundance. I'm like, I don't know.
Abundant.
If we don't like that decision, we'll just make another decision.
That's what I think. 110%. So at least, so you and I are batting 1 out of 4, you know, we're here for it. This has been amazing. And I have to say thank you because in addition to the money classrooms, in addition to the tendencies, you also talk a lot about fear. And I think that's the undercurrent that initially attracted me to your philosophy because I speak about fear because when the more we talk about it, and the more we normalize it, the more we can have open conversations around vulnerability. And fear holds us back in a lot of ways. Can you talk about the different types of fears that we, especially as business owners, experience with our money?
Yes. Well, fear was an interesting one because I talked to Dr. Chip Dodd about this and I loved his whole take on it because he said fear is your body's literal reaction that you are in need of something, that you need help. So there's actually a healthy fear when something reacts and you're fearful, to be able to name it and understand why am I fearful in this? And then that allows you to put safeguards in place in your life to help protect you from that. Now, when it moves into anxiety, and the fear just takes over and it's paralyzing, that's unhealthy. We don't want to go there. But again, if there's a money fear that kind of boils up, to be able to name it and say, okay, are there things in my life that I need to change? So the biggest fear people have, specifically women, is if something happens, am I going to be okay? Mm-hmm. It's that fear of financial security and to say, okay, I just want to make sure that I'm good. And again, 2020 is such the year of the example of money because again, so many Americans were just making it by month after month after month. And if something happened, a pandemic or something, and it shook everyone to the core, a lot of people woke up and realized, I am fearful because I may not be able to pay my bills. So using that fear as a tool to say, okay, so what are things that you need to do differently with your money to make sure that you are in control and make sure that you do have money saved in the bank if something happens, to make sure that all of your income isn't just going out to debt payments. Like there are things you can put in place in your life that helps you have a level of security that's really wise, really, really wise. So that's one fear. There's another fear that outside factors are going to control my situation and I'm not going to have a say. So, you know, everything from politics to the pandemic to corporate America, I mean, whatever it is, that all these outside factors, I'm not going to be able to get ahead. And those are moments where you have to say, okay, I need to be able to control what I can control and focusing on facts in that and not letting fear be your driver. Because you have to say, yeah, there are things in our life we can't control. That's life. So, you know, there's stuff that we can't, but what are the things you can control? And that's, you know, what you do with the money that you make, the money that's in your business. What are you doing with that? Are you being wise with it? Are you reinvesting in the places you need to reinvest? Like, are you being wise with that money? Are you around people that are encouraging you and that are challenging you? Like the people you surround yourself with, you have a choice of who you put yourself around. Your work ethic, you can control that, how many hours you put in and where you decide there's a season of sowing and there's a season of reaping. Like there's you know, different times of your business that require different parts of you. And are you willing to step in and do those things? So there are things around us that we can control, but focusing on the things we can't kind of leaves us at a dead end.
You had said something that I just want to repeat because it hit me very hard in that we can't let fear be our driver. And you also talk in the importance of dreaming, but sometimes dreaming impacts our ability to save money. So with the state of the world right now, you've mentioned the pandemic, you've mentioned a lot of stuff that's affecting the way that we're thinking and feeling about things. We need to learn how to save And that's like an art form. And I think maybe I also believe it's a discipline. So do you have advice for somebody who has trouble saving money? Like, what are the first things that somebody can do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you have to make it a priority. And so what ends up happening is when I talk to people and even just look at their budget, they're like, well, when I get down the list, like, I don't have any money to save. I'm like, yeah, that's because your budget is upside down. You need to make it a priority. You put it at the top and have little goals, right? I mean, have these things where you say, you know what? My goal is to save X amount. It's reasonable. It's realistic. Maybe it stretches you a little bit, but to actually physically put money in a savings account for a lot of people, just that one step is like, it's huge. Even if it's a couple of $100. So you're like, wow, it's over there. It's over there. It's not in my checking account. Like, it's just sitting there. I mean, that's a sense of, oh, wow, I have the ability to change. And that's one thing you have to realize is if you don't like where you are today financially, you don't like that you have no savings, you don't like that you're not able to be generous, you don't like these things, that's going to require you to change. And change is hard. Change is difficult. It's uncomfortable. It's not fun. Even my three-year-old, I switched my kids' car seats because I'd take them out of the car. And I put them on the opposite side, and my three-year-old would not get in her car seat because it was on a different side. And I thought, even my three-year-old hates change. Like, I'm like, get in the car, Caroline. We have to go. And so I'm like, gosh, it is. We're so used to being comfortable. And the moment you start to change, you are uncomfortable. But you have to have hope that what you're changing to is better than your present. And so in order to do that, though, like you said, in order to save and in order to change, have a dream. Say, hey, in the next 3 years, here's what I would love to do, and put it out there. I see people that don't save, they're not dreaming because they have nothing to save for. And so when you actually say, I'm going to look up to the future and actually have goals, have dreams out there, your savings begins to be a priority. You're willing to change because you want to create this life that you love and that you want.
I know that I am hardwired for saving. But I will say that as a business owner, it almost felt decadent to save for my business. And so if there's anybody listening right now, that the, one of the learnings I had in year two of my business was that there is a distinction between saving for my family and saving for my business. And then once I had saved for my business, I proved to myself that I was able to save for the first thing was a laptop. And that doesn't sound like a lot to somebody, but for me, investing in a laptop was a big move. And all of a sudden it was a muscle that I started flexing. And now I use a savings account as the ability to build a dream. So I just want to co-sign on what Rachel's saying, but also don't sit here and say like, oh, I'm dreaming for my business and it's going to be my shop on Main Street, USA. It could start very small and you develop that muscle over time. So as we kind of close, Rachel, you've given a lot of tactical advice and a lot of encouragement and a lot of ways to shape conversations that we have with our partners, with our children. And when I say partners, it could be life partners and or business partners. But somebody's listening right now and they're like, okay, I kind of sort of believe I have the capacity to change, but like, how can somebody change bad money habits starting today? Like, what's something that we end the podcast and somebody has like two or three tactical tips, like this is what I'm going to start today. I know you had mentioned the act of just moving money into a savings account. I thought that was pretty profound, simple and yet profound. Is there anything else somebody right now, what can we do to end this conversation with somebody with hope?
Yes, I love that. Yeah, I would say the savings thing, do that. Have these small goals. That's what I love. The laptop is a perfect example. Yeah, you're not just like having this massive thing. No, you have to be able to say, no, I have the evidence that what I'm doing is working. Mm-hmm. And even just buying the laptop, it is. It proves to you, okay, there's hope. So that's one thing I would say, yes, the savings, go ahead and open up a savings account. Just put some, and for your business, and keep it separate. Your personal and your business life should not be mixed. There should be a distinction between that. And so doing that with your business and your home life. And then I would say do a budget. I'm like the budget person. I'm a spender though and a free spirit. So a budget is usually not the thing that I love, but I've learned to love it because it's really the number one financial tool that puts you in control. You need a budget for your business and you need a budget for your home life. You need to know the money you have and where it's going. It will give you a sense of peace unlike anything else. And then number three, I would say engage in these conversations. Talk about money even when it's hard. Not if it's hard, when it's hard, because it's very vulnerable. It's a very scary subject for people to be honest with because there's a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. But have these conversations. We are not made to live in isolation. We are made to live in community. So whether that's a spouse, whether that's a good friend or a mentor, I don't care who it is, but, or a business partner, but just talk about it. Put it out in the open. And a lot of your past mistakes, people, it feels like it defines them financially. Mm. All of that starts to wipe clean because you actually brought it to the light and talked about it. So number three, I would say communicate about money.
I could not love this anymore. So number one, if you are ready to make a change, because like Rachel had said when we started, is that your life and your business finances, the way that you approach one is likely how you approach another. So number one, creating a distinct savings account. And she mentions this also for personal and business. Number two is to set a budget. Here again, I'm just going to insert myself in the conversation. Set a budget for yourself as well as for your business. And number three is to have conversations. Because when we bring conversations around money, we release shame. And when we release shame, we could step into freedom. Now, if you are sitting here and you don't feel like you could talk to your partner or you want practice before you speak to your children, I have noticed on Rachel's social outlets that even if Rachel isn't the person who's going to be giving financial advice, nor do I think she should, there is a community of people who are learning to talk about money, and doing it with strangers on the interwebs have opened them and given them courage. These are the things that I've seen in patterns with her community, which has been powerful. Rachel, how can people find you online and how could they go deeper with your content and your book that is dropping in early 2021? Yes and amen.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. The book is Know Yourself, Know Your Money, anywhere books are sold. And I have a podcast, The Rachel Cruze Show. And so it's anywhere you listen to podcasts, and I have a YouTube and a Facebook version, and yeah, Instagram, Twitter, all Facebook, all the places. I try to be everywhere if I can.
I love this. And y'all, if you want to do Rachel a solid and speak her love language, she is an Amazon shopper. So if you buy the book from Amazon, leave a review. Okay. Like let's keep this perpetual circle going. Rachel, thank you for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge. I'm happy to get to know you. And now I get to tell my sister, Rachel's my friend too. There you go.
I love it. Well, travel again, we'll have a glass of wine and talk about how different we are, but how alike we are as Enneagram threes. So
I love that. But you know what? You might have the wine and I might have the water because I value things and not experiences.
Oh, That's right. You save that money, Jasmine. Save that money.
You can spend it for me. Rachel, thank you 1,000 times over.
No, thanks for having me. It's such an honor.
Wasn't that conversation just incredible? Rachel's latest book, Know Yourself, Know Your Money, Discover Why You Handle Money the Way You Do and What to Do About It, is out now. And you can get it on Amazon, download it on your Kindle like I did, or get a hard copy wherever books are sold. I can tell you firsthand, this is not just another money book. As you could probably tell from the interview, that Rachel is not just another money expert. Jasmine and I really hope you grab it and take control of your financial mindset in 2021. Well, friend, Jasmine will be back here with another jam-packed episode for you very soon. You do not want to miss the next one. Let me just tell you, she's going to give you 5 prompts for Instagram Reels that's going to foster your engagement and entertain your audience in a whole new way. I seriously cannot wait for you to hear this tactical episode. So be sure to subscribe to the Jasmine Star Show from wherever you're tuning in from today so it downloads right to your phone. See ya!